Okay. Welcome, everyone. I'm John Gabriel, and this is the Gabriel Method Detox 2015. And we are on day four in Australia, day three in the U.S. for the second week of the cleanse. This is the week where we're doing mostly liquids to really flush out our system and heal our digestion. We've had some really cool webinars about detoxifying our home. And we're going to talk more about detoxifying our kitchen today, which is kind of cool. Let me bring Nadia in if I can. Nadia, you're there?
Hi, Jim. How are you today?
Good. You're coming in a little bit fuzzy. Let me hear you keep talking.
Can you hear me okay?
You're coming in fuzzy from my side. Aaron, how is Nadia coming in on your side? She's coming in fuzzy for me.
I've been plugging my mic and I'll plug it back in again. See if that helps.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. You're coming in
okay,
fuzzy.
Just give me 1 second. Okay, is that better?
Go ahead and talk, Nadia.
Hello, is that better? Can you hear me
You got it, yeah. You there?
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We had a problem. Okay, we're good. Okay, let's talk about where we're at right now. So we are on the fourth webinar of this week, actually, which we're going to talk about detoxifying your kitchen, which is, to me, is really cool because this is where you can kind of get the best bang for the buck. Simple things, replacing this one oil versus another oil, things you would never think of can make the biggest difference in your health. One type of beef versus another type of beef, really simple things that we're going to be talking about that are very practical to help us live that detoxification lifestyle that we talk about, which can make it much simpler than what I think most people think. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I really like a lot of the changes we're going to talk about today because they're changes that you don't really notice. They don't make much of a difference in flavor, and they really make difference inside your body. So they're easy changes.
Let me give you a perfect example of an easy change, which is not on these slides, which is a real-life change that I did yesterday, for example. So if you look at sausages, and I talk about this, I did a video blog on sausages recently in our support group, just because sausages normally are not healthy, right? So the meat's not healthy. It's usually conventionally farmed meat full of hormones, pesticides, and all kinds of toxins, and nitrates and preservatives, and then they're also putting fillers in that's typically wheat or gluten or flours, any types of flours, and all of those things make it not really healthy. But if the meat was just grass-fed beef, that's actually really healthy. And then you're bringing in organ meat and intestines, so the organ meat's got lots of things that we need that we don't normally get, and the intestines have collagen that help heal our own intestines. And then if you cook them right, so the way I talked about in the video blog, cooking them is to boil them, and then if you want them crispy, you can crisp it on the outside as opposed to charring the meat, because when you char the meat, it then becomes toxic. So if it didn't have all those bad things in it, if it didn't have the fillers, the gluten, all the stabilizers, all the hormones, all the pesticides, if it was grass-fed, it would have the right fat. Then you've got the collagen in the intestines and all the organ meat in there. And you prepare it right. Sausages can actually be really great. And you can't taste the difference between a good sausage and a bad sausage in terms of health, like a healthy sausage versus an unhealthy sausage. A healthy sausage doesn't taste any worse. In fact, it tastes better. So what I did was I went to my local butcher, and a lot of local butchers I'm finding are like this, where they're sourcing their own meat, and it's all grass-fed, and it's all, you know, free-range pastured, no hormones, no pesticides, no grains, so it's a really healthy beef, and it's not that expensive, and I started asking about their sausages, and they do put fillers in the sausages. They put wheat, and there's gluten or flour. There's always fillers in the sausages, and I said, well, can you just make me up some sausages? Without anything. I just want animal in it. I don't want any fillers whatsoever. And he said, well, we could do that, but you'd have to order a large amount. I said, what's a large amount? He said, 10 kilos. I said, how much is a kilo? He said, it's $10. And I said, okay, I'm going to spend $100 on meat right now. I'm going to be able to keep most of the just got a text from Shannon saying I'm making everyone hungry. I'm sorry about that. This is a challenge. Let me just finish the story real quickly. I am sorry about that. But the point is that I got 10 kilos of sausage for – it actually ended up costing me $84. So it was $8.4 a kilo. I don't know why it ended up costing less. Most of it I'm going to keep in my freezer. There is no fillers in it. Nothing's bad in it. And you can't taste the difference. If anything, it tastes much better. So I'm taking, on the one hand, something that's super healthy, super delicious. I'm sacrificing nothing. My kids are happy. Everybody's happy. And I'm getting something healthy. And it's not costing me anything. It's the same price as the regular sausages. I just had to ask for it special and buy it in bulk. That, to me, is the perfect scenario of the simplest thing that you can do that costs nothing to make one of the most unhealthy things into one of the healthiest.
Yeah, that's great. And I find that people are very receptive to your requests. You know, like how the butcher was receptive to giving you some options. In restaurants too, I always find chefs are very receptive to any requests I make. They, you know, chefs are artists in my opinion, and they're happy to create things for you if you give them some regulations that you'd like to follow.
Exactly. You know, we had it like, you know, we've got this Omega retreat, in August coming up in about 4 weeks, and it's a little bit of a challenge with the menu because they have the traditional vegan menu where they're not really paying attention to anything except for the fact that it's vegan, which means that you're getting things like General Tso's tofu, which is like all the best all the worst things for you rolled into one. When they make their vegetables, they put cornstarch in it, and cornstarch is just pure wheat gluten, and they use all the wrong oils. Little simple things like this, and this is what we're up against. So I'm just counseling them, saying, can you use an unrefined oil? Can you take out the cornstarch? Can you use tempeh instead of tofu?
Are they receptive?
Yeah, they're receptive. We've gone back and forth with them for 8 months on this, and we're going to have our own private area too, where we're going to have animal protein. That's just for our people. And so, you know, we go back and forth with them, but there's a real education, but it's the simplest things in the world.
Right.
And so we can just get right into it, and hopefully we'll try not to make people too hungry while we do it. But, this is one where, like, to me, where you get the biggest bang for your buck is knowing your oils.
Right? Yeah, right.
Because I'll just say the most oils are really bad for you. Not because they're fat and fat's bad for you, but because they are very, very inflammatory, hard to digest, and activate your fat programs because of all the inflammatory hormones. And that's most oils. And it just comes back to this whole processing thing. If you get the right oil and you cook it the right way, then you're getting something super, super healthy.
Yeah, right. And it's about what we've been talking about the last couple webinars. It's just about raising your awareness.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things have been around for so long that we don't recognize them as being unhealthy. We just sort of blindly accept the marketing and that they're okay for us to use. But once you start looking into things a bit more and raising your awareness, it's really good to start noticing which choices are better and better for your body.
Yeah.
And with oils, it's pretty easy to do it once you start becoming aware of it.
Right. So simply put, let's just do a little bit of education here. We'll start taking some questions pretty quickly. But simply put, refined vegetable oils are the most oils. So most oils in the processed foods. So if you go to the supermarket, the middle aisles are the ones where everything's processed. All the crackers and cakes and everything's used cooked with refined oils. Now, once again, the whole reason we refine something is so that it'll have a longer shelf life. It won't go bad sooner. But the problem is that we can't digest it. The same way it doesn't get broken down and digested outside of our stomach, it doesn't get digested inside of our stomach either. And because it stays in our stomach, it becomes inflammatory. It's actually not recognized as a food. Once again, this is the most common problem of all processed foods, is that processed foods are not recognized as food in our stomach, in our intestines, in our body, which causes an immune response, which causes chronic low-grade inflammation, which causes weight gain. So it's the fact that processed food, by definition, is not recognized as a food that causes all the problem. So the processed oils are the refined vegetable oils. So we have some of them here, corn, canola, canola, soy, safflower, sunflower. They're highly, highly processed oils. And because they're processed, they become inflammatory. They were originally, I think we talked about this before, I know you mentioned this, that they're originally made to treat wood and oil, and they're very cheap oils, and then they just started using them in food. Is that right?
Yeah, and you'll notice that these oils, they sneak into a lot of things. So yeah. It's really important to start reading ingredients. You'll find these oils in so many things, pasta sauces, all sorts of packaged foods, processed foods, salad dressings, all sorts of things.
Pretty much anything that's off the shelf is going to have these oils in it. They're cheap and they have a long shelf life. And that is a dream come true for a manufacturer, but not for somebody who wants to have a healthy body and a healthy life. They're not a dream come true.
It's really important to keep in mind that these big manufacturers, they have their bottom dollar in mind, not necessarily your health. So it's really good to keep that in mind when you're shopping and be really proactive about the choices you're making.
Well, think about what looks good for a food manufacturer. So if you're a food manufacturer, you're a multi-billion dollar company, because if you think about it, we're spending $100, $200, $300 a week on food, all of us, and there's billions of us, right? So that's a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about $1 trillion a week, maybe? You know, who knows? Because if you just look at the Western world, let's say it's just a billion people that are spending $200 a week on food. You know, that's $200 billion a week on food. That's a lot of money. So there's a lot of money in it. There's big business, and big businesses usually are public companies that have shareholders to report to, and the people that are running the company have to report to the shareholders. And the shareholders are asking, well, how much money do we make? That's what they're asking. They're not asking how healthy do we make people. They're asking how much money do we make.
Yeah.
So if that's the question they're asking, and I'm a food manufacturer, these are the things that I'm going to be looking at. I'm going to be looking at creating a food that will last a long time, so that it doesn't go bad. It can stay on the shelf. It doesn't need to be refrigerated. I don't need to ship it refrigerated because that costs money. So I can just ship it any old way I want. I can leave it on a shelf for as long as I want. That's something I'm going to be looking at. I'm going to be looking at what the cheapest ingredients I can use in the food. So that's another thing I'm going to be looking at. And then I'm going to be looking at how to create taste. And preferably even addiction.
Right.
So there's different things we can do for that. You can put MSG in it, and you can put other chemicals in it that actually make you addicted to the foods. And these are the things I want. So I want you to eat more of the food than you otherwise would eat, because I'm stimulating your appetite and because you become addicted to it, and because you buy it because it's cheap and because I spend a lot of money on advertising. So this is the world of big food, and this is who they answer to, and this is how they report, and this is their agenda, and that's great. This is the way the world works. It's their business. But what's happening recently, Nadia, is that I've read is that a lot of these big food companies are now buying up small organic producing companies, because people are not getting fooled anymore. They're not getting fooled by the pretty picture of a farm on a milk bottle or on eggs, you know, pretty chickens on eggs or something. People are not fooled by that anymore. They want the real goods. They're actually reading the ingredients. They actually care. And if you don't specifically say that it's GMO-free, some people are going to care about that, for example. And so they're shifting because we care. So if we care and we open our eyes, which is what we're doing in this whole process, they have to care, because at the end of the day, they really answer to us. We're the consumer. If we're not buying, then they have to do something to make us buy. So what they're doing is they're starting to really produce real organic. And what I've noticed in grocery stores now is there actually is areas in big supermarkets that are really real organic foods that are legitimate. There's no corners cut. They're actually real, legitimate, healthy foods. And that comes from us. We can't point the finger at them for wanting to be profitable. Good for them. They've got families. They've got mouths to feed. They're not alive here to make your life any better. They want to make their lives better. That's the way of the world. But where we need to look is at ourselves and how conscious we are, because the more conscious we are, then they have to appeal to us.
Right.
And if they have to appeal to us and we're being conscious, then we can change the world.
Right. You pretty much vote with every dollar you spend. And that's what they listen to.
Vote with every dollar you spend. That is brilliant. Thank you, Nadia.
You're welcome. And another way I like to look at it is they are, you know, there are CEOs of these great big multi-billion dollar companies. And I like to look at it as each one of us is the CEO of our body. We're the CEO of the business of our body. So it's up to us to do our own market research, to do our own campaigning, to do our own shopping and making choices to create the best business or body that you can.
Right. And then there's this sort of publicity campaign, if you will, that make you convince you that foods with chemicals in them, what they call conventionally farmed, are cheaper. And that's why we have to do it, because we have so many mouths to feed. But I believe that's sort of just kind of a hype campaign of the chemical producing companies, which are the same companies that own food companies, and they're selling chemicals, and they want to be in business too, so they have to create a need for themselves. And I think what really makes food cheap is economies of scale and distribution. So if you're producing lots and lots and lots of a specific food and you're able to distribute it really, really cheaply, then that's what's going to make the food cheap, not whether or not you're putting chemicals in it. You can farm foods naturally for the same price as chemically farmed foods. It's just you don't have the same distribution network and the same economies of scale. A perfect example is that Coke, bottled Coke, liter for liter, costs less than bottled water. From the same manufacturer. Now, how do you explain that? You can't say that it's cheaper to make Coke than it is to make water. You just cannot say that, because there's water in Coke. So why is Coke cheaper? Coke is cheaper because they sell more of it, so it's economies of scale, and they've got a better distribution network. That's what makes it. And the selling more and the better distribution, that comes from us. That comes from the vote that we do with the dollar that we spend. Because the more we spend on it, the more they're going to sell good foods, the more they're going to distribute it, the more they're going to produce. That's what makes something cheap.
Yeah, and that's why we're seeing some changes. As you said, you know, some of those big companies are turning organic in some of the things that they're making. And that's because of us. It's because of what we're choosing to buy and what we're asking for at the stores.
Yeah. Exactly. So let's talk about some healthy oils, and then we'll bring Den in to answer some questions. So the one thing I want to say with healthy oils is the first thing just to come back to this for one second, the same analogy as the sausages, is that healthy oils are the biggest bang for the buck, because you can't really taste the difference between a healthy oil and an unhealthy oil when you're making something. If anything, using a healthy oil is going to make it taste better, not worse. So you're not really dieting. It's not like an artificial sweetener doesn't taste as good as a sugar. A healthy oil tastes actually better than a refined oil, and it's one of the best things you can put in your body, because you need fat. Every cell of your body is covered with a layer of fat. Your brains are 60% fat. You need fat, but you need the right fat. If you don't have the right fat, your system doesn't work right. The hormones don't get produced right. They don't interact with the cells right. You're in a chronic state of stress and inflammation. So you need healthy fats, and you can't taste the difference. So get healthy fats. So the first thing to do with healthy fats is to understand that there's certain fats you can cook with and certain fats you can't cook with. You want fats when you're cooking, you want fats that don't get destroyed at high temperatures. And some of those fats are grass-fed butter, grass-fed ghee, which is clarified butter, cold pressed. Every oil always has to be cold pressed. Coconut oil, MCT oil is a derivative of coconut oil. These are the oils that you can cook with. I would not suggest that you cook with olive oil or macadamia oil or chia seed oil, which I like in my salads. You want those for cold oils, but you want to cook with these oils.
Yeah, right. And just in case people aren't sure what grass-fed means, that is butter or ghee that is made from the milk that comes from animals that are eating their natural diet of grass.
Yeah. Sometimes they call it, these days they call it pastured also.
Yep.
But cold pressed seed oil, nut and seed oils such as chia seed oil, which I like a lot, flaxseed oil, also hemp seed oil, they're high in omega-3s and they're good cold. You do not cook with them because the oil gets destroyed quickly. It's the stable saturated fats that you cook with. You do not cook with the nut and seed oils. But nut and seed oils, cold pressed, are great with salad dressings. All of my salads have chia seed oil or hemp seed oil. That's they all have, every salad I have, I just pour it on there with some balsamic vinegar, and that's my dressing.
Yeah, and salad dressings are another great bang for your buck. We're going to talk about that later, but such a great way to add nourishment and to make your salad taste amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Let's bring Dan in and try to answer a couple of questions if we can.
Sure.
Hi, John. Hi, Nadia.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. The discussion about oil is making the chat roll go crazy.
Yeah.
It's obviously a hot topic. Laurel says, I'm looking at the slides on healthy oils and avocado oil is in the picture. Is it considered a healthy oil?
Yes. The avocado oil is a really, really healthy oil. Nut and seed oils. Cold pressed in general, cold pressed nut and seed oils are good. They have to be cold pressed, preferably organic. Nut and seed oils. What you just want to stay away from all the time is refined vegetable oils, as we talked about in this slide, which is like corn, canola, soy. The ones you see in the processed foods, they're refined vegetables. They're very, very inflammatory. Your body does not recognize them. But cold-pressed nut and seed oils are very good for you, especially chia seed oil, flaxseed oil, and hemp seed oil, which are higher in omega-3s. Avocado oil is also very, very good for you. Not so much because of the omega-3s, but it's got other benefits that are really good.
And can each you of cook these, with? Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say that each of these oils have a very nice, different, unique taste.
That's
so
true.
It's great to get to know them, and you know, that's then you can start using them in your different recipes.
That's true. Macadamia oil, walnut oil, they're a little bit more expensive than, say, flaxseed oil. Even flaxseed oil and chia seed oil are expensive, but macadamia oil, walnut oil are a little bit more expensive. But they have a very definite taste and very nice taste. Well,
okay.
Dan, what were you going to say about the cooking?
Well, yeah. I was just going to ask, a few people have asked, can you cook with avocado oil?
I don't remember the answer to that question. I'm going to have to look that up. I think the answer is yes. What you do, the way you do, if you go online and you look at the smoke point of oils, you want to know the smoke point, and that's an indication of how high a temperature the oil can be without getting corrupted. I think avocado oil can be heated fairly high without being corrupted. Do you happen to know, Nadia?
I don't. I've never cooked with avocado oil. I always use it for body care products or for cold on salad dressings.
Yeah, I would suggest, you know, if you get some ghee from a health food store or some grass-fed butter and just keep it by the stove because it can last outside. It doesn't even need to be refrigerated. That's sort of like my default. I cook with coconut oil, but I find coconut oil has a distinctive taste. So I don't like, unless I'm looking for that taste, I don't use it as much, but I really love the taste of ghee, and that's sort of like my default grilling cooking oil.
Yeah, you're right about coconut oil. It does add a different taste, and depending on what you're making, sometimes that taste I find is really, really nice.
Sometimes, if you're doing something Asian, you know, some kind of Asian curry, coconut with coconut milk or something, it's a distinct taste. You know, like the other day, I didn't have any ghee, and I made some chili with the coconut oil, and the whole chili tasted like coconut.
Yeah. What about rice bran oil then, if you want something
that
doesn't have
I have talked about rice bran oil a lot years ago because it doesn't get corrupted at high temperatures. But you know what? It's not really a great oil. It really isn't. It doesn't get corrupted. That's true. But it's not a great oil. Compared to the health benefits of ghee and grass-fed butter and coconut oil, it doesn't have those health benefits. It just is good in the sense that it doesn't get corrupted at high temperatures.
Okay. Laura says, so cold-pressed sunflower seed, is that an acceptable Gabriel Method oil?
Cold-pressed sunflower? I would think so. If it's cold-pressed, it's a little bit high in omega-6s as opposed to like a chia seed oil, which is high in omega-3s, and you want more omega-3s than omega-6s. So I wouldn't have it every day as your default oil, but it wouldn't be a bad one to mix up with oils. So what do you think, Nadia?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that I've ever seen cold-pressed sunflower seed oil. But yeah, if it's out there, yeah, it would be a nice one to, like you said, mix in with other things.
Yeah.
Okay. What about thoughts on pumpkin seed oil?
Yeah, that's not a bad oil. That's supposed to be a good oil too, yeah. Cold pressed, once again.
Okay. Laurie's asked, and I remember last year, Nadi, you came up with some wonderful ideas, but she's asked, are there any good salad dressing recipes? And, of course, this isn't going to help with everyone's hunger.
It's always like this. Also, I'd love to get an indication, Dan, if you know, people are in the chat, how are people feeling today versus yesterday?
Yeah.
Are people feeling a little bit better? I'd love to, because usually there's a, there's, certainly a percentage of people that are feeling much better today versus yesterday. Not everyone, and every detox is different, and you know we're here, we can talk about that. But,
answer at the start, most of the conversations were about weird dreams and dreams about chewing and waking up and them being so real that they were waking up feeling guilty because they'd eaten on the detox.
Well, don't feel guilty. You can eat all you want in your dreams. and if you want to eat in real life too, but there is, you know, this is usually the day, the Thursday and the Friday. It's Thursday here. The Thursday and the Friday are usually the days where you just kind of are in the zone. You know, you've made it through what you needed to get through as far as the hard part of the detox for a lot of people, not for everyone. And I'd love to hear where people are at with that. But going back to, I'm sorry, I forgot what your question was then.
Salad dressing recipes.
Yeah, so we've got great salad dressing recipes in our recipe book. We got a whole bunch of them using chia seed oil and flaxseed oil. I know we have them there. Maybe we can pull some of those out and make them available. Dan, if you want to make a note, we could probably copy and paste some of those salad dressing ones. Nadia, I know you must have salad dressing ones because you just have everything amazing on your side.
Thanks. I know there's a slide later coming up about that, but I am going to put together a recipe page of salad dressings. But basically, I use whatever I have in the kitchen, and I try to balance flavor. So you always want to get something sweet, something sour, something salty, and a little bit of oil in there. The sour is the acid part. And so I have kind of a list of those things in my head, and I pull from those things and just kind of mix them together. It's always different, but I can certainly give some examples.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, I just do it on the fly. So my salad dressing is real simple. It's just I'll actually just pour chia seed oil on my salad and then pour balsamic vinegar on it. You know, that's my thing. You know, it's real simple. I'm on the go. I made something and boom, 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 done. If I wanted to get fancy, I might put some mustard in there, or some Italian seasonings or curry or my favorite cayenne pepper if I wanted to go that way.
Yeah, spices are great.
Yeah, but that's sort of just the real quick default.
Yeah, and I mean, just like a quick citrus dressing would be something like orange juice. It's a little bit of orange juice mixed with almond butter and whatever oil you'd like to use with a bit of lemon and one date. And you blend that all up, and it makes a sweet citrus dressing.
Nice. Yeah, we've done a tahini one where you put a little bit of tahini. So it's chia seed, balsamic, tahini, I think a little bit of tamari, I forgot. It's in the recipe book. I know that one works really well, but to me, you know, when you're on the go, like my lunches are usually, there's going to be some kind of animal protein. There's going to be a lot of salad and sprouts, and I'm just going to pour some chia seed oil and balsamic vinegar on it. And that's sort of it.
Yeah. When you're out at a restaurant too, you can always get them to bring you some oil. Typically it'll be olive oil in a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then a wedge of lemon. So, you know, if you're stuck and you're at a restaurant.
Or balsamic.
Yeah, balsamic they'll always have too.
Yeah. Okay. Dan?
Okay. Well, you actually answered Lisa's question from yesterday. She wanted to know pros and cons on balsamic vinegar.
Yeah. So balsamic vinegar is a little bit sweet, but in that it does have a sugar content to it. But it's got a lot of health benefits and just a little bit of it goes a long way as far as taste is concerned. So,
okay.
I use
What about almond oil? Is that okay? My almond oil says refined for high heat. Is that bad?
You can get cold pressed almond
oil. You want it cold pressed. You don't want it refined. And it's okay. Yeah. It's also another one of those oils that's high in omega sixes. I prefer the oils that are higher in omega threes because of the imbalance between the omega sixes and the omega threes can cause inflammation too. So I do prefer those, but yeah, that's not a bad one for being cold.
Almond oil is a great one for making body care products.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Kelly says, how much oil should we limit ourselves to daily this week?
Yeah. Oh, this week. See how your stomach feels at this point because your digestion is shut down. So I would go by your feeling. Definitely. What do you say, Nadia?
Yep, I agree. I mean, just if
you're going to have too much oil, you're going to feel it. Your stomach's going to react to it.
Yeah, and people have been mentioning that as well. They've already been noticing that after they have a detox tea. I just wanted, you were asking about how people are feeling today, and I was in the question and answer page today, and a lot of people are wondering about what to eat when we come off the cleanse. So here on day four, people are already starting to look towards that.
Sure. Let me talk about that real quick then. So we are. I think we're going to talk a lot about that tomorrow and the
next day. Yeah.
But just to get ahead of it, I've done it a lot of different ways. But to me, the most important thing is that you get yourself some really good fermented veggies, soft fermented veggies. So if you look at fermented veggies like sauerkrauts and kimchis, even if you look at the different manufacturers, if you go to a health food store, it might be three or four different manufacturers depending on the health food store. Some of them are real soft and some of them are still hard. You want a really, really soft fermented veggie. You want to get probiotics and digestive enzymes. So when you eat, you want to take probiotics and digestive enzymes with your meal. You want to have really soft fermented veggies with maybe some salad and some sprouts. Other ones that are really good are fruits that have enzymes in them, such as papaya is a really good one, and berries. And you want to eat throughout the day as often as you want, but you want to eat really, really slowly because your digestion is going to take some time to wake up. So you want to, you know, you might want to just a bite of something, and then 10 minutes later or half an hour later, you want a bite of something. Just go really, really slowly with very, very highly, easily digestible foods for the first day. In the second day, you can start introducing some proteins, like animal proteins, very slowly. With some salad. Again, try to take digestive enzymes with every meal. And you might even want to start doing a little bit of exercise on the second day, just 5 or 10 minutes of intense exercise the second day, just to get your metabolism going in another direction and start to rebuild any muscle that may have been lost over the week. So you'd want to consider doing some exercise. You'd want to look to have a nice solid movement. Bowel movement at least by the second day. If not, then you might want to start taking some of the teas that we recommended. Like I think we talked about fennel tea or senna tea to make sure there's a good movement. And we'll talk a lot more about that. But in general, fermented veggies, salads, sprouts, and fruits like berries and papaya are my choice when I go off of a detox. And also to continue to have juices and super greens or even miso soup or some sort of other broth. Those are my choices, really, really easily digestible foods. What do you suggest, Nadia?
Yeah, and two things I'll add to that are once you start eating, you want to definitely keep up your intake of water. So not while you're eating, but just on an empty stomach throughout the day, keep drinking water because you are still in detox, cleansing, flushing mode during that first day of eating. So you want to support your body in that and have your body slowly ease back into digesting food. And then the other thing is to make sure you chew your food really well, because chewing is what signals your brain to send enzymes to your stomach. It signals your body that, you know, your digestive system wants to start working again. So you want to chew your food even more than it needs to be chewed.
Yeah, and the most important thing is your stomach's, you're going to be different than you were before this, in that you can't just chow down food, a large amount of food, and then just walk away business as usual. You have to eat a really, really small amount of food, just a couple of bites. Give your body a chance to react. It might take an hour or so, and then you're going to want some more. Have a couple of bites. You got to do it that way for the first 2 days or so, and then you're back to business as usual.
And almost everyone is very, very surprised by that first meal. Everybody is then dreaming about food and thinking about it. And that first meal, they're so excited to have a nice big plate of food in front of them, and they get that, and they have one or two bites, and then they're full.
What happens is you just get this instant no. Your body goes no. That's enough, and you're surprised. It's so different than, like I say, you know, if you do a 1 day fast for religious reasons, for example, and I think we've all done that one time or another. You're not drinking any water, so already you're really, really hungry. Your digestion hasn't fully shut down, and then you get to that meal and you just stuff yourself and you can't eat enough. It's a very different scenario when you get to where you are right now. You think that's where you are, but the second you eat something, it's just like, oh, okay. Let's just take this really, really slowly. We'll come back to this.
And then let
yourself come back to it as often as you need to and eat as often as you need to, but just have little bites.
Right, exactly. For me, it's, you know, I'll have a couple bites before, and then maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes later, I'm ready for another couple bites. And it's like that pretty much for that whole first day.
I like miso soup a lot for some reason when I'm just getting off of a detox, because there's a little bit of substance to it. It's firm, especially if it's organic. So if it's organic, it's a fermented Fermented organic soy is okay. Most soy is not, but fermented organic soy has healthy digestive enzymes in it. There's some substance to it, but it's also very easy to digest.
Another couple things that I like sometimes coming off a cleanse are soaked prunes. So you put prunes just in a little bowl of water and let them soak for a while. You can drink that soak water as well and have a little bites of the prunes. And smoothies. So make a smoothie with the papaya and berries and maybe some baby spinach in there. And smoothies are really nice because the blender has done some of the digesting for you.
Yes. Yeah. Even put a digestive enzyme into the smoothie and let it work on the food. You just want to give your digestion as much support as possible. Okay, Dan, can we you want to take a few more questions?
Amy Jo just said, I checked the organic coconut oil that I have, and it says refined for cooking, so I assume it's not healthy. Is that correct?
It doesn't need to be refined. You want cold pressed. Is that right, Nadia? I'm not familiar with the term refined for cooking. It just sounds to me refined.
Yeah, cold pressed to me is the most natural way. So basically the method of cold pressing is that they're taking whatever it is, the avocado seed or the olive seed or the coconut flesh, and they're pressing it. They're not applying heat to it. They're pressing it to get that oil out. And to me, those are the oils that are as close as possible to their natural state, and that's what I like to use.
Yeah, you know, my kind of like suspicious mind when I hear that refined for cooking sounds to me like they're telling you that they're going out of their way to take the trouble to make it something better for you, when in reality, that process is a cheaper or easier process for them and keeps the oil lasting longer for them.
And I think I know because I've seen this in the supermarket. They've taken the coconut flavor out so that when you cook with it, you don't get the coconut flavor, but supposedly still get the benefits.
And the other thing they've done is they've made
Take the coconut oil flavor out?
That's a good question to ask. And then the other thing with the coconut oil that they've done is they've made it so that it stays liquid all the time, whereas real coconut oil
That's exactly what it is. And I would check for stabilizers in there too. And stabilizers are really bad for you. You know, I remember one time I was buying coconut milk in a can, and it was always the same. It was organic coconut milk, and the only ingredient was organic coconut milk and nothing else. And then they were out of it, and I got this other one that was organic coconut milk, and it had some stabilizer in it. And I think does this make sense, like, that the stabilizer was carrageenan?
Yeah, it's either carrageenan or guar gum sometimes.
Carrageenan. Yeah, so it's carrageenan. And this was years ago before all the hype about how bad carrageenan is for you. And I had this, and that was the only other ingredient, and I couldn't eat it. The second I ate it, my body just rejected it. And it turns out that carrageenan is a stabilizer. They put it in there so that the coconut milk would be nice and liquid. The other coconut milk that I was getting was hard at the top and liquid at the bottom, so it required some stirring on my part. Big deal, you know. I don't mind doing a little stirring, but this was nice and smooth and creamy and pretty, and at the same time carcinogenic. And I could tell it was, and carrageenan is carcinogenic, and I could tell it was before, you know, the hype. There's a lot of research about how bad carrageenan is for you, but before that, my body instantly knew that. But they're doing it to make it pretty, you know. So they're doing this to your oils to make your oils liquid and pretty and easy for you, and everything's so easy and packaged and it smells good. But at the same time, when you're putting it in your body, it's having a deleterious effect. So take the trouble to take the hard oil and make it a little bit soft. Have it just be cold pressed oil and nothing else. I think it's I'm really glad you brought that up, because it's a perfect example of how they do these little things to make you convince you that they're going out of their way to do something to make it easier for you, when really they're just doing it because it's in their interest.
Right. And another thing too about all of this is that a lot of the manufacturers, they're doing things to make things quick and easy. They're making the food, fast convenient food.
Yeah.
And if you look back in time, which I always like to do, human beings used to spend the majority of our day either gathering food, preparing food, or eating food. That was the majority of our day was spent all around food. Nowadays, we've moved away from that, where all our food is just very fast, convenient food, and we eat on the run, and we eat while we're talking on the phone, and all of these things. And I really like to remind people, you know, It does take a little bit longer sometimes to not have processed food, but bring some of that ancient wisdom back into your life. And it's really, really a nice practice to connect with your food and spend a bit more time on looking for your food, on gathering your food.
And growing it. If you can do it, growing sprouts in your kitchen, it's just a fabulous thing to do, or fermenting your own veggies. You know, it takes time. It only takes a couple of minutes to prepare it, but then you got to wait for it to happen. That's the thing with all of those things, with growing sprouts or veggies or fermented foods, is it could take a couple of days or weeks for it to come into fruition, literally. But,
right. It's about finding that rhythm, right? Like, you know, at the very beginning, it might be a little bit of effort that you have to put into it. But if you do it over and over again, you'll find that rhythm of keeping your ferments going and keeping your sprouts going.
And if you're not doing all that and you're just buying convenience foods, it's good to do a cost-benefit analysis. So this oil is a perfect example. So what's the benefit? It's a little bit more liquid. It might save you less than 2 or 3 or 4 seconds to pour the liquid versus pull it out, pull it out with a spoon. That's the benefit. What's the cost? The cost is that it's going to be really bad for your body because of the changes in it. So to have that consciousness to know when to take advantage of convenience and when to pass on convenience in this modern day and age is a really useful skill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Is wine vinegar okay? Mel asked that question.
Sure. I would think so. What do you
say? Again, just look for the best quality, the best source it in the best way you can, so it doesn't make sure it doesn't have a bunch of added extra things in it,
right?
Color dyes or anything like that.
And preferably organic if you can.
Yeah.
Okay. Sharon says, you've mentioned sunflower oil is not great, but what about sunflower butter?
I've never heard of sunflower butter.
It's the same. It's going to be the same. It's the same. It's got to be derived from the same thing, the oil, under the best case scenario. And whatever else is in it, I would really want to know, because the oil in and of itself is not solid oil. So they're doing something to make it solid, and I would really want to know what that is. So I know at the moment I'm a pass on that one.
Okay. Cheryl asks an interesting question. I recently read a report that organic olive oil isn't organic and is mixed with other oil. How do we know we are getting a good product?
That's a really good question.
So I would contact the companies. So in my experience, companies that are making a really great product are very happy to sit on the phone and talk to you for a very long time about everything they do. They'll point you towards resources. They'll invite you to their factories and show you how it's made. They'll do all of that. If a company isn't forthcoming with that information, you might want to dig a bit deeper.
You know, there's so many dodgy things. I remember a couple of years ago when I was in the States, I was drinking what I thought was just lemon soda water, right? No sugar in it, just lemon soda water. That's what I thought it was. And it said on it, no artificial flavors. That's what it said. But when I tasted it, and again, this is how, you know, your body really gives you an indication, it tasted dodgy. It was like this chemical experience that ran through me. And I read the ingredients. And aside from sodium benzoate, which is a preservative that goes into, it's in a lot of things, it had aspartame. And aspartame is a diet sweetener. It's an artificial diet sweetener that's one of the worst things you can possibly put in your body, and causes weight gain, bipolar disease, depression, anxiety, stomach issues, heart issues. It's one of the worst things you can put in your body, and it is artificial. And I thought, well, how are they getting away with the fact that they're saying there's no artificial flavors? And then I thought, Is it that they are somehow getting away with this because they didn't specifically say there's no artificial sweeteners? They just said there's no artificial flavors.
Right.
And I'm thinking, wow, I mean, they fooled me, right? And I'm into this stuff. And that's really, really dodgy.
Yeah.
I would say, as a general rule of thumb, though, what do you think? Tell me if you agree with this. The smaller the company is, the more local the company is, the more likely you're going to get real ingredients.
Yeah, and those are the companies that will talk to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's just all the more reasons to go to things like local farmers markets, because a lot of times, like those same sausages I was talking about that I got from my butcher, I can get them at the local farmers market that happens once a week. I can get those for $7 a kilo, and there's no fillers in them. And there's lots of things at farmers markets, and there's no middleman at the farmers market. And the person will tell you exactly how they made the vegetables or the meats or whatever it is.
Right.
That's the way to do it. And everywhere, even New York City's got farmers markets now, and they're real farmers markets. People are coming in from upstate New York. They're growing their own stuff. Maybe it's not certified organic. It's pesticide free. It's locally grown. It's in season. They've got heaps of it, so it's real cheap. That's the way to buy. You know exactly what you're getting.
It's great to develop relationships with people that are growing your food.
I know. Yeah, exactly. And they'll give you specials or deals, or they'll put something aside for you that you know that you like. And you never have to worry about ingredients if you're just buying an actual vegetable or a meat and that's all that's in it. And you're talking to the person and you don't have to worry about all the other things that could go into a prepared food. It's not prepared food.
Right.
So just these little habits are things that will make a tremendous difference in your weight and your health going forward. Anyway, Dan, let's bring you back in a little while. I want to talk about some other processed foods and what to do about those. And so all these different, sauces, salad dressings, dips, anything that's boxed or packaged. These are all the things that we're talking about, that they're basically making them for convenience. You can just pick them off the shelf, and you got these cheesy skillets, cheesy cracker, whatever they are. It's real convenient, but your body doesn't recognize it as food. Your brain and your taste buds do, because these people spend millions and millions of dollars figuring out how to get your taste buds and your brain to register something as food and not register the chemicals as chemicals and have everything feel good. And then you get to the situation where you just get used to the fact that you have an upset stomach or bloating after you eat. And that's no problem, because you can just take an antacid, and that's a $25 billion market a year, is antacids. Or you take a this or that pill because you're depressed, because you're not producing the right serotonin, so you take an antidepressant. So all these things are just, they're selling you left and right, but they're not food.
Right.
And that's the reality. And where you want to get to is you want to get to the place where your body recognizes that they're not food. And the way to do that is to no longer be addicted to it. The same way that if you've ever been a smoker, the first time you inhaled a cigarette, you coughed like crazy. Once you became addicted to this cigarette, it was just the most pleasurable experience in the world, because you're addicted to it. It's a toxin. You've got antibodies that are receptive to it. You need it. You want it. You have to have it. But in the beginning, it was disgusting. When you purify your body, all of these things here become disgusting. And then you've won the game. You've won the game because it's no effort. You naturally will not go anywhere near. Nadia will not go near any of these foods. It's not an effort for her. She doesn't say, I got to stay away from that ranch dressing. No, she wouldn't be able to. I could blindfold her and serve her a salad with the ranch dressing, and I can tell you she wouldn't eat it, because her body is pure. You can get to that. It takes some work, and that's the work that we're doing, but that's when you've won the game, is when you're naturally repulsed by the foods that people have spent hundreds of millions and maybe hundreds of billions trying to figure out how to get you to be addicted to.
And the first steps are raising awareness, like we're doing here, and then reading ingredients, like I said before. And that's even with, John, like that lemon soda that you mentioned earlier, if something is marketed as being healthy, it's marketed as a health food or an all-natural or all-organic or whatever they say on it, still turn it over and read it, because those ingredients can sneak in sometimes.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about wheat in general. Wheat is something that we're all addicted to, and most of us can't imagine going a day without bread. And I can tell you, when I was 400 pounds, I did not go a day without bread, and or wheat or toast or pizza. I had to have it, but it's an addiction like any other addiction. And one of the reasons it's an addiction is because it's so toxic. And the reason it's so toxic is because it does a couple of things. It causes tears in the lining of your stomach, so that you're leaking toxins into your digestion all day. And it causes certain neurotransmitter experiences in your brain that make it toxic. And the inflammatory effect of it, combined with the elevated insulin response effect of it, puts your body into chronic fat storage mode, to the point where you lose the ability to burn fat. You're hungry all the time. Your metabolism slows down. You're craving these foods all the time, and your body's been transformed into a fat storage machine. And I can tell you, because I lived through it, I did have a body that was transformed into a fat storage machine. It's a living nightmare. And the worst part is, you go to a doctor or this or that. And I'm not knocking doctors per se, because I always believe you should go to your doctor whenever you feel that you need to. But the conventional wisdom, this is still not out there. And it's just, oh, eat less, and you're just shamed. And so I lived through this experience where my body was turned into a fat storage machine, and I've got 200 extra pounds, and people are looking at me like I'm weak and I'm lazy. In the meantime, I've got fitness trainers at 7 in the morning. I'm working with Dr. Atkins. I'm doing everything I can. And I'm still being shamed because there's this thing I should just eat less. But at the same time, there's this hormonal experience in my body where I've lost the ability to burn fat, and I'm chronically hungry, and I'm addicted to all these foods. That's causing this experience. And so you have to understand this so that you can get to the other side of it. And wheat is one of the biggest culprits because of the gluten and also because of the insulin response that it has on your body. Like all grains, it elevates your insulin response so much.
And one of the things that why these 2 weeks is an amazing gift that you're all giving yourself is because while you're cleansing, you're allowing your body the chance to break the physical addictions to a lot of these things.
It is brilliant, though.
Yeah. So that when you start eating again, you've got a few steps forward towards not wanting to have them anymore.
There's something really magical about a detox in terms of its ability to break addictions. No one's really studied it, but I've experienced it and I've heard other people experience it. And I think it has something to do with the fact that when you're addicted to something, you develop certain antibodies. And it's actually the antibodies that cause you to crave the substance. It's a misfunction in the way our bodies are adapted to this world that causes this type of addiction. And the antibodies die when you do the detox, and you're left with a clean slate. So it's this brilliant way of accelerating a breaking of addiction that's very, very powerful. So you are left with a clean slate, and it is worth paying attention to that when you get out and being aware of how you can become addicted and try to protect yourself from becoming addicted.
Right. And then another thing that happens too is your taste buds, your mouth receives food differently. So the food tastes differently after a cleanse. And things like wheat, like for example, soft, spongy white bread, if you put it in your mouth after a cleanse, you'll find it tastes like glue. And it actually is the same ingredient that glue is made from. And you chew it up and it gets really pasty and gluey and gummy in your mouth. And a lot of people find themselves where they never thought they would ever get to that point. They find themselves really turned off from it. And they never noticed before how not nice it tasted, the texture was.
Well, I mean, on the same note of glue, I remember when my daughter was younger, she used to keep cornstarch in the fridge, in the kitchen, which is not something I would ever buy. And cornstarch, even though it's corn, it's actually wheat. It's wheat gluten. And I used to say, well, why do you have cornstarch in the kitchen? She said, this is how we make glue at school. This is how she was at the Steiner School, and the way they made glue was they took cornstarch and water.
Right.
And you made glue. That's how you make glue. And when you put it in your stomach, it creates a glue. It's a glue that glues up your intestines and stops your body from digesting, and it causes rips and tears in your intestines. And that's a glue. And then we talked about salad dressings, how most of them are packaged. And, you know, it's real easy to make your own salad dressings. And as you mentioned, you'll provide some for us. Another really good one is salt. So regular, this is another bang for the buck type of thing. So healthy salt, you can't taste the difference between healthy salt and unhealthy salt. But unhealthy salt is inflammatory, and healthy salt is really good for you. It's got trace minerals, Himalayan salt and sea salt and volcanic salt, all of these salts here. They've got volcanic salt especially. It's got sulfur, which is so good for you. Himalayan salt's got 84 trace minerals. These are things your body really, really needs. So you want gritty, dirty-looking, organic, real salt, and those are the salts that you want, as opposed to processed salts. And that's another really good bang for the buck.
Yeah, this is an easy, quick change.
This is an easy, quick, and you're okay. So even if, like, when I look at Himalayan salt, it costs like, I don't know, something like $8 a pound, and you think, well, you know, regular salt only costs, I don't know, $2 a pound. So what is that? It's four times as much. But a pound of salt is going to last you 6 months, right? So you're spending $6 more to get health and nutrients into your body without sacrificing any taste at all for a six-month period. So to me, that's a good bang for the buck.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Spices. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so spices are another one that are really easy to change out because the fresh spices will taste really great. And the thing to remember about spices, like it says here, is they have a shelf life of, you know, you don't want to keep spices for years and years and years on your shelf. And when you buy them from a typical store, a standard store, you don't know how long they've already been on the store shelf. So it's really hard to know how old your spices are unless you're getting them from a really good person, which again is something to look for locally, that they'll most likely have better spices. And spices are amazing. I mean, spices are an amazing, amazing way to add flavor and nutrients to things like salad dressings and anything else you're making.
And juices, you know, like, yeah. So I recently started putting Italian seasoning, just Italian herbs that I got. They were just organic, chopped up Italian herbs. I put them in my salad, on my salads, as part of the salad dressing. It works really well. And I put them on, like, if I'm making chicken or something like that, I put them on that. And then with juices, I put a lot of herbs in my, and pepper and cayenne pepper and spices in my juices. And that works, works
and
really well.
And things like that golden milk that we talked about during the pre-class, you can add so many spices to that. And it's amazing.
Yeah, someone in the support group, the support group Facebook, posted a recipe for that golden milk. So thanks for that. We talked a lot about this, you know, cleaning your kitchen. So we don't have to, with safe cleaners, we don't have to talk too much about that because we went into detail about that. And I like this one a lot, make your kitchen come alive. I'm wondering if you could talk about that.
Yeah, I love this one too. So to me, it's all about, again, making the food part of your life a bit more of a priority. And part of that is making your kitchen a really fun place to be. So when you go in your kitchen, you want to really like being there. So for me, that means, you know, doing my best to keep my kitchen clean. So when I'm in there, it's really nice and easy to find things. Put fresh herbs out. So have fresh herbs growing in pots, or buy them in a vase of water so they last longer. And they will add such an amazing smell to your kitchen.
Yeah,
have flowers in your kitchen.
Especially basil or mint.
Mint is amazing. Have, you know, a flowering plant in your kitchen, or fresh cut flowers if you like that.
Yes.
Grow sprouts, so you've got that energy of food growing in your kitchen. And even just very simply, I mean, this goes way back to the 50s of just, you know, buying really nice, colorful fruit and putting it in a bowl on your table or on your counter. And all of that just adds such a nice feeling. Put pictures up in your kitchen. You know, whatever it is that you love, that you're passionate about, put those pictures of those things in your kitchen. If you've got a window, pull the drapes so the kitchen is nice and bright. When you're in your kitchen, play music or play an audiobook or, you know, play something that you love to listen to, and just make it a really, really nice part of the beautiful space in your home.
I know that. I know that experience. Sometimes you walk into someone's house and they're exactly living what you say, and there's nice music and it's warm and there's spice smells and there's sprouts growing and it, you know, they just picked something from their garden and it's just bursting, and that's a beautiful, beautiful way to be. There's no question about it.
Yep. Another thing that we have all around our home and in our kitchen is rocks. So amethyst rocks and crystals and things like that are beautiful as well.
Beautiful. Okay. So we don't have any salad dressing recipes on these slides. So if we could post some of the salad dressing recipes into the Detox Facebook forum, I think that would be great. People would really appreciate that. So Dan, if you could just make a note of that, we could get them from our recipe book, or Nadia might have a couple of them. That would be great. We'll talk a lot about how to come off of the detox tomorrow, and also the next day. I think we're going to do a live event where you can call in and talk to us. Are we doing that this time, Dan? Do you know? I'll just bring Dan in for a second.
Hi, John. Yes, we are.
Yeah, we're doing
Definitely
that. So tomorrow we're going to have a webinar. We'll have our webinar, and we're going to be talking about how to conclude the cleanse, which a lot of people are concerned about. And then the next day, which is Saturday in Australia, Friday night in the U.S., we're going to have a live event where it's a video event where you can call in and we can actually talk and have a kind of a wrap-up party. I'll have some snacks here that I'll be talking about that are ideal for getting off of a cleanse. And you can share it. We can all share in that, and we can connect that way, which is always kind of cool. But in the meantime, let's stay in if you can, and let's answer a few more questions, and we'll take it from there. Yeah.
Okay. Lots of questions because we're talking about food, I think. What about red palm oil?
I've heard that's good. That's a good saturated fat that you can cook with. Are you familiar with that, Nadia?
I'm not. I've never used it.
Yeah, red palm oil is supposed to be a good saturated fat that you can cook with. So. I have heard good. It's a little bit like coconut oil that way.
Yeah, well, the palm tree is in the coconut tree family.
Yeah.
Okay. What is a good oil for stir frying?
Ghee. My favorite is ghee. Ghee is always my favorite oil. So ghee or organic coconut or organic butter or cold pressed coconut oil.
Okay, thank you. So Donna says, how much oil a day in general post detox? Would love to know your opinion on this.
Yeah, so for me, my body tells me. I go days, I might go a whole day without having any oil per se, and then I'll have days where I'm having, you know, massive amounts in my salad dressings and in my cookings. So this is your body. You need healthy fat is something you really, really need. It doesn't make you fat per se, the way we're conditioned to think. It's not the way the physiology of the body works. The way fat is made is through a metabolic process that really involves the activation of insulin, which is activated by sugar and starches and carbs and inflammation more so than healthy fats. Healthy fats coat the cells of our body, the cells of our brain. They help us produce healthy hormones, and all of that provides effective communication in our body. That's essential. It's not necessarily the physiology of making fat. If you're eating healthy fats, your body will tell you what you need. And there are some people that eat very, very large amounts. And I don't want to put a number on that because you may not need much or you may need a lot. But if you're eating healthy fats, your body will tell you, and you're going to get healthier and healthier, more and more in tune with your body because you're going to have better hormonal communication in your body. And that's going to give you even better indication of how much to have. So for me, you know, when I'll just kind of slather it onto my salad. If it's chia seed oil, I'm not going to measure how much ghee I put in when I cook something. There's fats in the meats that I have. I'm not paying too much attention to that. I don't have a lot of nuts anymore. I think there's an inflammatory component to just nuts. Maybe it's the too much omega-6s, but I find that my body does not respond very well to just nuts and the fat in nuts. But animal protein, ghee or butter or coconut oil, and chia seed oils, these are where I get the majority of my fats, and I find that me personally, and I'm not sure if it's a universal thing, but certainly for me personally, and a lot of people I work with, those fats work really, really well in any quantities that your body finds as suitable. The other thing is when you have a lot of healthy fat in your body, your satiety rate goes up. Because sometimes this is what you're looking for, and you're not getting it in cereal and non-fat milk. You kind of stay hungry all the time. When you get the fat that you need, you're not as hungry. So your body will communicate with you better.
Okay. Well, actually, this might help answer this question. Carla says, when should I see a change in my psoriasis? And she's also made the comment that she's getting a lot of weird dreams, which I mentioned before.
Yeah. So, Nadia, do you want to talk about the psoriasis as far as the detox or...
Yeah, so I mean, that's going to be different with each person. I can't give you an exact answer for you, but I have seen many people that have psoriasis and eczema and different other skin issues that they do get better in time with cleanses. And with some people I've seen during a cleanse, it will clear up. With others, it takes one or two cleanses. But I have definitely seen a correlation between people cleansing and moving more into that detoxification lifestyle and those issues clearing up.
Yeah, so what we've also seen is once the detox is started, maybe the skin issues come up, maybe they're even erupted. But if you're living a more detoxifying lifestyle, as we're talking about, you may not need another cleanse, but it may take a few months for it to work through. I remember in our first cleanse, Marisol Roca, who's now a UCE coach, she had chronic rosacea, which is a skin eruption rash issue. That has been healed. Her thyroid was healed. She lost 70 pounds. All of that didn't happen immediately, but the cleanse certainly started it. And then she went on this path of taking her health into her own hands, learning as much as she could, getting healthier and healthier. And she's in a really beautiful place right now. She also will be at the Omega Retreat next month, and she's going to do a couple of talks, and I'm excited about that.
Okay, thank you. Jennifer says, what kind of digestive enzymes do you recommend?
So a full-spectrum digestive enzyme that's plant-based is good if you don't have any particular digestive issues. It's also good to get a digestive enzyme with betaine or HCl, hydrochloric acid, especially when you're having proteins. Because as we talked about before, one of the problems, especially as we get older, is we don't produce enough stomach acid to digest our proteins, and that can cause a lot of problems. So that's really good. If you don't have a
gallbladder?
Thank you. it's just spaced out here. If you don't have a gallbladder, you want to have one that has bile in it also, and you'd want to take that with every meal.
Okay.
What are your thoughts? I just wanted to know if you.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. All that sounds good.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, I'm starting to get a few questions just about the detox in general. Sonia says, I still have bad heartburn, also beginning to get a yeast infection. Is this normal?
Yeah, so Nadia, do you want to comment on that?
Sorry, Denali, can you read that one more time?
Yes, sure. Sonia, she still has bad heartburn, but right. She's also beginning to get a yeast infection. Is this normal?
Yeah, I've seen that happen for sure. So I would suggest it might sound like I keep giving the same answer over and over again, but it really is what works. So you want to keep that flushing going in your body. You want to keep flushing out, keep drinking enough water, keep drinking enough of the other things to nourish your body, nourish your cells, and allow your body to flush out. With the yeast infection, if it is quite bad, you can do you can take a garlic clove and you can insert the entire garlic clove and sleep with that overnight and then take it out in the morning. And sometimes that helps because the garlic can kill that yeast. But sometimes what happens when you're detoxing is your body is releasing a lot of the candida is dying off, a lot of the unfriendly bacteria is dying off. And as your body is releasing that, it can present sometimes as something that feels like a yeast infection.
Yeah, so if you think of it this way, so you've created an unfriendly environment for the unfriendly bacteria. So the bacteria that used to live there that were not good bacteria for you to have in your body, it's no longer hospitable, and they're migrating, and they're trying to come out. And so they could come out in many different ways, and that's one of the ways that they're coming out.
Right. I just wanted to go back again to the digestive enzyme.
Yes.
I just thought of something I wanted to add to that. Another thing that you can do to support that digestive process is about 15 minutes before you eat, sip on a mug of water that has either lemon juice in it or apple cider vinegar in it. Mm-hmm. And that just, it helps your body to, it encourages your body to secrete the hydrochloric acid that your body produces, and it sort of sets up your stomach for digestion. So that's another way that you can work with that.
Okay.
Lisa says, I've not had any ill effects at all, but this morning I had about 6 ounces of juice and about a half an hour later it all came out. Was at work, so I didn't want to have any more juice in case it happened again. I just did the broth and water and tea the rest of the day and was okay. Is this unusual?
No.
Not unusual, no.
No.
So what thing, like evacuation, elimination can manifest in many, many different ways, but a lot of the times that's another example of, you know, exactly specific about what you meant by that, but just as an example, if you're going to the bathroom a lot and you're having like loose bowel movements, for example, that are frequent, a lot of times that's killing the bacteria are trying to get out. Your body's trying to flush that bacteria out, and that's also very common.
Yeah, and that's a lot of times where that sour stomach or that queasy, nauseous stomach can come from, is a lot of that die-off. And it doesn't feel nice.
Yeah. So if you look at it in terms of, you know, your body is your body is a host to trillions of bacteria, five times or seven times, I think they say, more times bacteria than cells. They all have their own DNA. They can control your thoughts and your cravings and the neural impulses and the hormonal impulses in your body. And they got a stronghold on you, and you have shifted things to make things inhospitable for them. There's a lot of things that can happen there. In some cases they're dying off. In some cases your body's flushing them out. In some cases they're fighting, and that's what's going on. And it's all good for you because you're winning the fight because you're making a place for them that's inhospitable.
Right, and they also have byproducts. So sometimes they release some gas, or just the actual effect of them dying is the byproduct, and that can cause some of that cramping and bloating that some of you might be feeling.
Yeah.
Okay. Hawks says, put powdered protein in the drinks. How many times per day? Now, I'm not sure if they mean at the moment or in the future. So maybe.
Yeah, I'm not really clear on that question. So.
Okay.
During the detox, you wouldn't necessarily want to have powdered protein. You might want to have super greens, but not necessarily powdered protein. And then going forward, you need protein when you eat, but it doesn't have to be powdered protein, but you just need a source of protein. So I'm not really clear on that question.
Okay. Gail says, do the majority of Gabriel Method participants eat meat and fish when they are not detoxing?
I don't know, but as a general rule, we recommend eating animal protein. But there are a fair amount of vegans for religious reasons and other reasons, but we certainly, from a health perspective, recommend a real food diet. The real culprit here is processing food. That's the real culprit. If you're going to be a vegan, you still have to realize that processed food is the culprit. So it makes it much easier to be in the world eating animal proteins if you're just looking to find alternatives to man-made and processed foods. And certainly there's a lot of really good components to it. And so for me, what I recommend is a real food diet. That is food that has not been tampered with as much as possible. That's what your body understands. That's what keeps you healthy.
Okay. Bronwyn says, I usually test my acid levels with a urine test each morning. It usually sits at 6.7, but this week has dropped to 5.5. Is this because of the toxins being released?
That's very possible. What do you think, Nadia?
Yeah, definitely. So your urine will certainly be more acidic while you're cleansing.
You might want to drink a little bit more water, also just to help with that cleanse process or liquid.
Okay. Paula says, can we have wild salmon on day one or two of the off the detox?
You probably are going to find that you're not going to want it day one, day two for sure. But day one, you just want the most gentlest purees and fermented foods and broths, things that just require almost nothing to digest. Animal protein does require more digestion, and you'd certainly want to take a digestive enzyme, preferably with betaine or HCL in it, to help with to assist with the digestive process. But you probably would find that if you did eat it, or if you did try to eat it, there would be kind of a rejection from your body pretty quickly. Maybe not, but I would give it one day. What do you think, Nadia?
Yeah, and when you do go for it on day two, have it with a little bit of something fermented, so a little bit of sauerkraut on the side of it, and that'll help your body to digest it as well.
I was having bowlfuls of fermented veggies for days, really.
Yeah.
And I still have it as part of my life, but I was making a real point of really, because if you think about it, you've killed all those unfriendly bacteria. What I did after that is I just loaded up with friendly bacteria. I was taking probiotics, bowlfuls of every different fermented veggie I could, drinking fermented juices, just really loading up on friendly bacteria just to give it a chance to proliferate.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to repopulate with all the friendly stuff.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, Joe's asked a very interesting question. I think I have an addict mind. I'm feeling great on my day four, but I still keep thinking about the reward binge afterwards. How do I deal with those thoughts and avoid the binge?
Well, you might find what we've been saying is that's really natural to have those thoughts, but when push comes to shove and you're sitting at the table, you're probably going to find that that's not going to happen, and it's going to surprise you. But you're going to only want to take in really gentle foods and just little bits of it. Do you agree, Nadia?
Yeah, and another thing is also, too, I mean, you're doing really great during the cleanse, right? So think of those first 2 days of eating. Think of that as part of the cleanse. So think of the cleanse not being finished on the day you're eating. Think of that as day six, and then the
really
next day
advice.
Is day seven. And it's still stay in that mindset of the cleanse.
That's really good advice, because coming out of the cleanse is the most important part, because you want to, like I say, you want to repopulate your system with friendly bacteria, and put yourself in a direction where you're creating this upward spiral of wanting more and more health, as opposed to once you have a clean slate, just instantly repopulating your body with unfriendly bacteria, which is going to crave junk food and create a downward spiral. Give those two days after the cleanse as part of the cleanse to put you in the right direction. That's a really great way to look at it, Nadia.
Okay, thank you. Terry says, can we use bone broth as a miso soup base?
Yeah, Yeah, that's really good. That's a really good way to come off that. And just see how you feel about it. I found that it took me two or three days before I could have bone broth once I got off the cleanse. And that's just because it was just, my stomach was just still a little bit gentle in coming out of the detox. But as long as it's not giving you an upset stomach, then that's a really good thing to do. Yeah.
Okay. Carla and Laurie are both allergic to soy. They use the vegetable soup on the first day instead of miso? And Laurie says, yes. Is fermented soy okay for people who are allergic?
Yeah, usually it is. It's usually fermented, usually gets, as long as it's organic and fermented, it usually takes care of a lot of the problems. And keep in mind, even like when you look at the question is, can we have vegetable soup instead of miso? Well, try to stay away from this idea that you have to have something. So all I said was I kind of like miso. So you don't have to have anything. If you stay with the concept is you want really gentle, easy to digest. So a vegetable broth is very easy to digest. If it's got some veggies, some solid veggies in it that are real soft, that's easy to digest. Maybe if it's a puree, also easy to digest. If it's with fermented foods and you take it with probiotics and digestive enzymes, that stay with the concept is you want really gentle, simple, close to lower life forms as possible. So just simple plants or even spirulina is an algae, so plants or algae or beans, you know, just something as simple, close to simple life as possible, and then work your way up over a couple of days. What do you think, Nadia?
Yeah, I agree with that. Broth is something I've typically found for myself that after the fast, I've had so much during the fast that I'm not so into it for a little while. But just as you were talking there, I was thinking, you know, if a broth would be a really nice thing to have as well, if your body still wants it, and then you could add in some of those other things. So, you know, even some soaked seaweed, some cilantro, thyme, crushed garlic, if it's not hot, it's just a nice warm bowl, you can add in a nice dollop of sauerkraut in there, and then, you know, you can eat all that stuff, whereas during the cleanse you could only have the broth. Now you can eat everything that's in there.
Yeah, so one thing is if you were going to make a broth the same way that you would make it normally, and instead of straining out the vegetables, keep the vegetables in there and maybe put them in a blender.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good way to transition out.
Yeah, okay. Claudine says, and this is tying in with what you're saying, that you don't have to have something.
Yeah.
I'm planning to have sprouts instead of fermented veggies on day one. That's okay.
Yeah. Sprouts are great. Okay. Sprouts are so easy to digest, and they do have friendly bacteria. I find that I crave them a lot when I'm coming off the cleanse. Yeah.
And see how your body is, because sometimes sprouts, if they're not sprouted enough, they might still cause a little bit of digestive distress. So just see how it goes, you know, just like we're saying with everything else, have a little bite and see what your body says.
One thing I would suggest, so if you look at the different sprouts, so I find that mung bean sprouts are very easy to digest, whereas lentil and chickpea sprouts, maybe they have a little bit more protein and maybe there's just some starch in it. They require a little bit more digestion. That's just my experience.
Yeah, and they also take longer to sprout. So everything you sprout has a time frame for sprouting. And maybe that could be because they haven't been sprouted long enough too.
That could be that. That's exactly what it could be. So mung bean sprouts, you might just, if you happen to see those, I find those go down really easy.
Okay. Mel, that's an interesting question. Can we make our own coconut oil with a juicer?
Coconut oil? Why? That sounds interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a video
like a cold press juicer. You mean like masticating juicer?
Yeah, exactly. I've seen that done in a juicer. I've never tried it myself, but I have.
What would you do with the pulp? Because you could do something with that pulp too. You've got to be something.
You dry it out and make coconut flour out of it.
Yeah, I see.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. What about miso for dressing? Salad dressings?
Yep.
I put it in my salad dressing.
That's a yes.
Do you have a nice recipe that you could let us know, Nadia?
Yeah, I can put one together. So that one that I mentioned earlier, I put miso in that often with the orange juice, almond butter. I put a little bit of miso in there.
Okay, yum. Laura says, I bought a tray of wheatgrass yesterday for juicing. I'm not sure how to take care of it. Do I water it every day? Also, once you cut all the wheatgrass in the tray, do you throw it away?
Yeah, so there's you got to know what you're doing a little bit with that. So you have to cover it for a day or two until it sprouts. You have to spray it, cover it, so that it starts to sprout. And then once it starts to sprout, then you got to let it grow, and you got to kind of spray it every day while it's growing, and then you cut it, and you usually only get one, maybe two goes with it. So once you cut it and juice it, and you need a special juicer also that does wheatgrass, so you sort of kind of have to know what you're doing with that a little bit. But if it's a masticating juicer, it'll do wheatgrass. And then sometimes you can get a second run, but the second run, the grass is usually kind of stringy and not as tasty. And so you usually can only count on one good run. Do you have anything on,
yeah,
on that?
Yeah, the trays I think that she's talking about are the ones that are already grown. So you can buy them in places and they're already ready to cut.
Oh, yeah, then keep them in the fridge. Keep them in the fridge.
And those ones,
they last longer in the fridge.
Yeah, and typically when I've gotten those, I've only ever gotten one go out of them. So you snip it with scissors, however much you want to use, and then what's left is just compostable.
Yeah, thanks for that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Vanessa asks, can we have pineapple post-cleanse?
What do you think of that, Nadia?
Yeah, pineapple is fine, but you're very sensitive after the cleanse. And so pineapple, you might find that you really only can handle a very little bit of it, and then it'll start to taste funny in your mouth because pineapple has a lot of enzymatic activity in it.
Yeah.
So it's great, but just watch, again, listen to your body, and you just might not want too much of it to start.
I find berries work well. What do you
– Yeah.
Berries are really easy. I remember the first detox I ever did, I'd gotten some frozen blueberries. They were organic frozen blueberries. And you just have a couple of them throughout you keep eating throughout the day. They have a really nice taste sensation. You haven't eaten in 5 days and you eat a berry, it tastes like the most amazing,
Yeah, and berries are great too because they're slightly laxative, so they're going to help you to get your digestive system going in terms of bowel movements. That's why the prunes are also really good. If you soak the prunes and let them soak for a nice long time, so they're really, really nice and soft, and those are nice too.
Okay. What about homemade mayonnaise? If we want it sometime, is it good? And what's a good oil to use to make it?
Yeah, so I think we have a recipe for homemade mayonnaise also in our recipe book, and then maybe you could copy that in there. But I would use chia seed oil or hemp seed oil as the oil for the mayonnaise, and then absolutely it becomes a really, really healthy thing to eat. It's, again, the problem with mayonnaise is the refined oil. And other than that, the mayonnaise is actually really good.
Okay. What about hummus for an after-cleanse food?
You can try it. Again, see how your stomach reacts to it. What do you think, Nadia?
I wouldn't have it the very first meal. I would wait until at least late in the evening on day one or day two. And if you can get hummus that's made from sprouted garbanzo beans, that would be even nicer.
Yeah.
Okay. Laura says, I've been looking into dehydrators lately. It appears that the majority of Excalibur dehydrators are made with polycarbonate. Is that something we should be concerned about?
So I have an Excalibur dehydrator, and I've had this question posed to me before. And when I use my dehydrator, it's used at very low temperatures. And it's one of those things that I'm always open to finding new options. So I'm always looking to see if there's better options out there. But at the moment, it's for me, I still enjoy using it. I have it at low temperatures, and I just think that the benefits I'm getting from it are outweighing any of that.
And what about that plasticky tray that you use?
Yeah.
You have to use that? Like, can't you just use, I don't know, something else? Wax
paper? if you can manufacture something else to go in there instead
just,
of what
just
they
some paper,
give.
Just some like...
are you talking about the Teflex sheet?
Yeah.
So... if you can manufacture something else that you find is better, email me and let me know because I'm always open to other options. At this point, I'm still using that Teflex sheet because I've tried other things and it doesn't seem to work as well.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
We're going to be in the webinar next year talking about Teflex and like. Can't get away from it.
Learning something new all the time.
Yeah, last year, Nadia, I don't know if you remember this. You were talking about how. You can like dehydrate things in your car, like you put it on the dashboard of your car in the sun, and it's a perfect way to dehydrate. I'm thinking that like the back seat of my car has been a dehydrator for as long as I've had kids, like without even knowing it, like I'll clean the back and there'll be a dehydrated banana that's been there for a month,
it's
your car is a good way to dehydrate. We forgot to mention that this time.
Yeah, that's a great thing to do. And I see whenever I'm in Japan, I go for walks. And I see people all the time dehydrating things on the dash, front and back dash of their car.
Yeah.
Well, the traditional way is to lie down in the sun, isn't it? On on a rock. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, talking about breads and wheat in general, what about gluten-free bread?
Yeah, so there's something that I have. Yeah, gluten-free is better, for sure. Sprouted is better. We are experimenting with making breads using things like a flatbread using psyllium husks and egg yolks, or chia bran or coconut bran or coconut flour. There's different ways that I don't recommend that you use almond flour actually for breads, but you can make like flatbreads or banana breads using things like this. But one thing I really like, it's not a bread, but it's a cracker, is veggie crackers. And we talked a little bit about this, you know, with the dehydrator. You can take the pulp of the juices and dehydrate it as a cracker. And there's a company here in Australia that does this. And those crackers are amazing. They're just vegetables dehydrated with some nuts and seeds and some seasonings. And they're crunchy. And that's a really satisfying experience. And all it is dehydrated vegetables, nuts, and seeds. That's sort of the direction to me. Some people do the same thing and they make a wrap. So if you take like a vegetable, the same way you would make veggie crackers in a dehydrator, if you took that same paste, put it on the Teflex in a circle, and then turned it over before it got crispy, then you can make a wrap out of that. I also use Nori sheets for wraps. And I'm experimenting right now with a wrap that's made out of psyllium husks and egg yolks, and I think that's gonna be really nice. But I haven't finished that yet. What do you think?
I make a wrap out of coconut meat as well, which comes out really really nice. And then the
is
other
that coconut meat or coconut flour?
Coconut meat, so the fresh meat out of the young coconut.
Yeah, and what do you do? Dehydrate it or?
You take the meat out of the fresh coconut, put it in your blender with a little bit of the coconut water, and then whatever flavorings you want. So my favorite is basil and tomato wraps, and so you put that in there. You can do Italian seasoning or however you want it. If you want a sweet wrap, you can put a couple berries in there. And then you blend it in your blender until you get like a pancake batter consistency. And you pour that on your dehydrator tray. And it pours into a nice circle. And then you dehydrate it just like you said. You dehydrate it on one side, flip it over, and then take it out before it's crispy. And that becomes – it's a beautiful wrap. And then the other thing you can do with crackers is if you're making them yourself, if you make them nice and flat, they'll come out crispy. But if you make them a little bit thicker – then you can dehydrate them just until they're a bit soft, and then they have more of that bread feeling.
Flatbread type of feeling, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Then let's take one more question, and then we'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Can I sneak in too?
That's my morning. I know it's two more questions. That's why I say that. If I said two, you'd say three. So.
Yeah, you better not say two next time, because you know. Yeah. All right. It's just about bread again. I think Yvette asked an interesting question. Corn tortillas are like a basic in Mexican cuisine.
Yeah, yeah.
So what about eating corn flour for corn tortillas?
Yeah. So these wraps that Nadia is talking about can serve as a corn tortilla type of substitute. Infinitely better for you.
Yeah, definitely. And then with seasonings, you can make them really taste however you want them. Yeah.
Okay.
And you can even make like nacho type crackers. You can cut them into, triangles. And we've done this. We've made nachos using veggie crackers that we've cut into triangles, and then put on top of it grass fed beef, maybe some raw cheese, some onions. You know, you've got an amazing nacho experience. That's really healthy. That's to me. That's the art of being healthy, is to make something taste delicious where you can't taste the difference between just yours and your Taco Bell, as if Taco Bell is the most, you know, something to aspire to. But you know what I mean? So whether yours or just the processed version, it doesn't feel like you're dieting per se, but you're eating something really, really healthy. It's gooey, cheesy, crackery, and it's really, really healthy. That's the way to go. To move in that direction is the way to create sustainable health, and that's what we're always trying to do with our recipes.
Okay. Elaine says, is Hawaiian black salt also healthy? I usually use Himalayan, but saw the Hawaiian black salt.
Yeah, it's volcanic. Anything volcanic is loaded with trace minerals and sulfur. So, yeah, that's really good.
Okay. Thank you.
Cool. All right. Excellent. All right. Well, let's try to answer them in the members area if we can.
Yeah.
And again tomorrow, and we'll talk about the best way. We'll talk more about the best way to come off of the cleanse, and then also we'll have our wrap up party the day after. So we'll be here answering questions, and try to get to everything. And in the meantime, keep going because what you're doing is fabulous. You've done the hard yards, as they say here in Australia, and that's fabulous. And you need to be congratulated for that. Now's the time to really, really reap the benefits this next couple of days, and also the couple of days that you're going off the fast, to just look at those as part of the whole cleanse experience. Is that probably the most important, is spending those extra couple of days to get you moving in the right direction. If you look at where you are now, imagine that you're moving in one direction versus the other. So I'm going to just draw this little mini graph here. So you're right here. And if you go on the cleanse in the right direction, you're going to be going this way. If you go off the cleanse in the wrong direction, you're going to be going this way. And if you look at where that experience is going to be in 6 months from now or a year from now versus where you're going to be moving, the direction you're moving, if you go the wrong way, this, you realize that this couple of days is really, really crucial to make sure that you continue to go in the right direction.
Yeah, that's great.
Like that? Okay, cool. All right, so we'll speak to everyone tomorrow. Have an awesome day. Enjoy, cleanse, be pure, feel that purity and that love that's going through your body, and we will speak to you real soon. Okay, thanks everyone. Thanks Nadia, thanks Dan, thanks Aaron, thanks Shan, Alice, Deja, and everyone that's in there, and we'll speak to you real soon.
Thanks, John. See you tomorrow.
Take care.